And it was real easy to do that. The somewhere around 3 years, things started changing and started shifting some, and it wasn't for the better. I'm starting to manifest a bunch of weird stuff that I don't really understand where it's coming from. I'm looking at stuff online I shouldn't be looking at. I'm spending money like an idiot. I'm buying things I don't need. Did y'all ever do that? Y'all ever buy stuff you didn't? I mean, I'm buying tools I don't need. I'm buying music I don't listen to. I'm buying clothes I don't wear. It's just weird. Later looking back, I would see that I was scratching an itch that used to be scratched with the booze and the dope, but that internal condition was coming back, and it was goofy. Guys, I always wanted to learn how to fly. And so when I got sober, I'd already done all my testing drunk and did fine, but the FAA wouldn't let me fly drunk. So I think they're being a bit childish, but I finally got sober enough that I could take a check ride and got a rating and then got another rating and then got another rating. And I really liked it. We ended up having, I needed to buy an airplane, and then it wasn't big enough, so I had to buy another airplane. And then I needed something else, and so I bought another airplane. Now, the only reason I'm telling you this is because I want you to understand, my wife is standing across the room with her arms folded in front of me going, we can't afford one airplane. And now we own three. But that'll give you an idea about how crazy and kind of off the chain this stuff is going. I'm starting to manifest anxiety disorders that they're treating. And then we get all that taken care of, and the depression comes back. At 4.5 years sober, I'm suicidal. I can't function. I can't go to work. My wife is baffled. We ended up having another daughter. So at that time, I have two daughters by then. We would later have another one. And they don't know who's coming home. I mean, I'm coming home from an AA meeting, and they don't know. Is it going to be good old dad? Or is it going to be a piece of shit dad? And it could easily be that. I need, because we're trying to be transparent as we can, I need to tell you, I'm not working the steps. I've never looked at the big book. I have a sponsor in name only. We haven't done any work at all. And so looking back, it's no wonder that I was so amazingly off the page and in the ditch. It's just a weird place to be. But I got to tell you that the Chris, my twin, stepped into the picture again. He's moved to the hill country down where I am now. And he got a guy by the name of Mark Houston who was sponsoring him. And Mark kind of altered Chris's path of where he was going. And every time I talked to Chris, he was happy. He was laughing and having a good time and this kind of stuff. And I called him one evening. I had almost drank, and I had a beer in front of me at a 7-Eleven at a convenience store on the counter. And I walked away from it, but it was a miracle that I did. So I called Chris, and Chris said, you know, Myers, for almost 3 years now, I've been telling you that what you needed to do was go to another group where you could get plugged into what AA really is about, instead of 32 meetings a week that are all discussion meetings. I just didn't want to leave them. These were my new homies, and they were my besties, and I didn't want to leave. But I had no choice, because it was obvious that whatever was happening was going to take me out of the picture. And so he introduced me to an old cat named Cliff Bishop, who passed away years ago. Clifford was my sponsor for 26 years. Clifford's sponsor was Joe McQuaney of Joe and Charlie. And you can sort of tell where this is going. You can sort of I walk from a culture in AA where we all I knew were the aphorisms on the wall. Think, just don't drink. That's all I knew about recovery. And then I walked into a room full of crusty old bastards who knew the text and had an answer for almost everything that came up. But they seemed free and they seemed like they were enjoying life. And so I made this commitment. I said, folks, I'm gonna come over here and study with y'all for like 3 months. I'm going to give it like 3 months and I ought to understand it all by then. And then I'm going to go back to my old group and I'm going to be this iconic. Yeah. Let me tell you all about that book. And that's what my plan was. Well, I never went back. I stayed over there with those guys and got busy doing the things that I was supposed to do. It was a beat and I made them really uncomfortable for a while. And, I remember Clifford one time catching me in a little side room off that meeting hall. And he said, Myers, he said, I got to tell you, dude, he said, I teaching you the steps, teaching you what Bill Wilson and the first 100 had codified in that text. That's going to be the easy part. Getting you to unlearn all of this old crap you brought in here. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. And I remember being to this day grateful that he had the patience to keep correcting me until I finally got rid of all of those old ideas that I had. Guys, listen, I'm not saying that you can't go to a bunch of discussion meetings and learn something eventually. The problem I have is that what if you're new? What if you're 50 days sober and you go in and you're listening to people share their opinions and ideas? How do you know what's real? How do you know what works? Listen, I had a lady one time, she pulled me aside after a meeting. I'll never forget, her name was Evelyn. And she said, Myers, she said, I've been sober for 7 years. And I said, cool, Evelyn. She said, but you know what? I never did that stuff that they were reading about, that they were talking about, that the steps and stuff. I never did any of that. I said, no shit. How did you stay sober? And she said, yoga. And I went, no kidding. Now listen, so stick with me. I'm not ragging on yoga. I practiced it religiously for 10 years and regret that I ever stopped. It was wonderful. But y'all, I mean, I can remember sitting there after that meeting and going, okay, I can work the steps, which is kind of goofy, or I can be in a room full of scantily clad gals, all sweaty. Yeah, yoga. That's it. It made perfect sense to me. I don't know, y'all guys. If I could change anything, I wished that we would stop telling newcomers to just keep coming back. You'll hear what you need to hear. Because I got to tell you, there are some cultures within AA and within these recovery communities where you might not hear what you need to hear, and you certainly might not hear it until the madness comes back on you in the middle of the night and you're off and running again. I mean, the madness is going to win. You got to deal with that. And time is not your friend. It truly is. So anyway, listen, so what I want to talk about for a few minutes here is the things that changed after I got plugged in with Clifford and Joe. Joe would come down from Arkansas and we'd visit and he was an amazing dude. And but the things that began to change were evident right off the bat. One of the things that happened was that I began to connect up the dots that sometimes meeting makers don't make it. You can go to a whole bunch of meetings and you can still get in trouble. I know that there are folks in here who just heard me say, don't go to meetings. I'll get emails tomorrow from people going, I heard you say don't. I never said that. I think that if your lifestyle lets you go to a bunch of meetings, go. But Ben, you got a little kid that your life is full. I mean, there are things that change and you can't do that. You just can't. But there's also nothing in our literature that ever said that your sobriety is tied to how many meetings you go to. It never says that. Later they began to indicate it a little bit, but it was just some of the most mentally sane people I've ever met in these rooms are going to one meeting a week. They've got a commitment to carry a message someplace, so they're out teaching. And they're sponsoring people. Now, I mean, these are key pieces that our literature asks us to do. And I just think it's important to do this stuff. Working with others is key, and we'll talk about it in just a minute like that. How many of y'all have ever listened to an old guy, kind of an iconic guy in AA named Don Pritz? If you've never heard this cat, go look at some of the old talks that Don did in the late 60s and 70s. Don was an iconic AA guy that sobered up. He's dope fiend from hell and sobered up in the federal penitentiary system in Denver. And he was just a joy to be around. He had a kind of a spidey senses that you could talk to him, and he could his sense where you're coming from, but he could also sense a layer of dishonesty underneath that, and he'd call you out on it in 2 seconds. He was pretty phenomenal. But in an old talk that he did, he said, "I'm concerned that these days," and he was referring to the late 60s or early 70s, whenever that talk was, he said, "I'm concerned that these days we tend to talk more and more about sobriety and less about recovery." Now, guys, stick with me a minute, because I got to tell you, this is a huge statement, because what he's painting a picture of lines up with what the basic text was talking about, that we could live a life transformed by what we did as a result of that work. We would grow towards a spiritual solution. We would grow towards an ability to help others. These are life-changing deals. It didn't just staying sober one day at a time, which is what our fellowship sort of picked up on. And you'll notice in the 70s and 80s, especially in the 80s, there were a jillion brochures that were written that all started moving that direction, how we keep ourselves sober one day at a time. And I would literally like to punch whoever wrote that in those brochures. I'd like to punch him in the nuts, and I would laugh the whole way I was doing it. I just that's not very spiritual, but I don't give a crap. I got to tell you guys, there's stuff that slipped into our fellowship, and in the guise of membership, we want to be all inclusive. We want to this, and as a result, we stopped focusing on some of the things that we sure should have been paying attention to. This is the reason why book studies and meetings that focus on the text are so amazingly powerful, because day by day, you'll begin to connect up the dots and you'll begin to understand. And there's a moment, I think, that runs through most of us. It's like a common thread when all of a sudden you realize, hey, wait a minute. I don't have to be hip, slick, and cool. I don't have to shoot from the hip. I don't have to say something cute. What I have to do is understand the basic text and the common solution that Bill Wilson talked about on page 17. And once I understand that, my responsibility when I'm sponsoring Ben, my responsibility is to carry the message what was in that text. I don't have to be Ben's sober coach. I don't have to be telling him how to live his life and do all this other stuff. I just need to understand what the directions were. Bill Wilson was clear on that little piece over there. This common solution was huge. And we go, well, everybody understands that. Well, I disagree. Besides the fact that I've sponsored hundreds and hundreds of men, I've also been in thousands of meetings, and I'm blown away by how distracting and conflicted people are, how much confusion there is. Guys, let me make a suggestion. The next time you're sitting in a meeting, like a discussion-y kind of meeting, just close your eyes for a second. Just close your eyes and listen to what's being said. Don't look at the screen. Just listen to what's being said. And then at some point, imagine what it would be like if you were new in that meeting. If you were a brand new little rascal sitting in that meeting like that, are you hearing what you need to hear? That would be a life-changing direction of what you could do to save your life. Or are you hearing somebody pissing and moaning because they couldn't get their weed eater started, or their mother-in-law was coming over and they were, y'all understand what I'm saying? Come on, guys, you're 3 days sober and you're sitting in a meeting and some guy's taking up the whole meeting talking about his experience at a grocery store. Do we care? Do we give a fuzzy rat's rear about that? No, we don't. But it happens thousands and thousands and thousands of times every day. We talk about things that have no bearing on the guy that's sitting there 3 years, 3 days sober, cracking his knuckles, rocking back and forth and going, can I do this? Is there any solution here? A little heavy-handed? Maybe. But I got to tell you, guys, I'm sick and tired of watching people come to our rooms, come to AA, come to our DAA. I'm also a member of Drug Addicts Anonymous. I'm tired of seeing people come and then leave. And then some crusty old bastard in the back of the room will go, well, you know, the booze or dope will drive them back in here. I'm going, you know what? What if they'd have heard what they needed to hear and they didn't have to leave at all? I mean, why couldn't we just stick with that? It's just something to think about. It's like we get pulled down this side road we get up in the fellowship and the rest of the stuff. And I'm totally digging all of that. There's not a damn thing wrong with that. If the fellowship in part wasn't here, I wouldn't be here. But there's also a time when we have to realize how important it is that they hear what they need to hear. I got a big book right here. I'm on a fancy big book, and I'm going to read a little piece of this, page 14. One of the other things that happened when I got plugged in with Clifford and Joe McQuaney was that they obviously insisted that we read the text and that we pay attention to this common solution. I need to be sure that everybody was clear on this kind of stuff. At 7 years sober, quote unquote, when I met Clifford, I didn't know who the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous were. So I told Cliff, I think it's a couple of old guys, I think, but I didn't know who they were because I'd never read any of this stuff. You see, that's how removed I am from that. And we still get this kind of contempt. Well, I see it all the time in meetings. When I start talking about big books, people will push back because they think that the meeting is just where we share our experience, strength, and hope. Anyway. Down at the very bottom of page 14, the genesis of Alcoholics Anonymous happens. Bill's laying in the hospital bed, and he's having these thoughts that somebody as self-righteous as Bill Wilson was. The fact that he had these thoughts was miraculous for sure. But look at what it says at the very bottom of that page. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice, that's the key right there, for others, he would not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If it did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that. And then maybe my very favorite line in the big book, believe it or not, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. That word abandon ourselves always makes me smile because it's a commitment, and it speaks of an enthusiasm that most of us know. I abandon myself to fly fishing. I abandon myself to trying to figure out how to play my stupid banjo. I abandoned myself to eat boiled peanuts. I mean, these are things that I love to do. But sometimes we don't ever get there in the program. Work and self-sacrifice for others is what they're talking about. Guys, let's be real clear here. Going to a meeting is not work and self-sacrifice. It may be a pain in the ass, to go sometimes. But working taking a call at 11 o'clock at night from somebody, that's work and self-sacrifice. Being at a meeting an hour early so you could help set up. That's work. Y'all understand, carrying a message to a wind-up joint or treatment center, a place like that, that's work and self-sacrifice. Guys, before the Rona shit hit 2.5 years ago, the group I was involved with in Dallas, we had 52 commitments a week to carry messages other places. We were carrying the big book to 52 different places, not counting our three book studies. That's a lot of places. Let me just get a show of hands. How many of you guys have ever done any other like outside commitment, like carrying the message someplace else? That's way more than what I usually see. Way more. That's kudos, y'all. That's some good stuff. It's a game changer. You can go sit in a meeting and wait to be fed all you want to. That's what you want. But at some point in time, the single most magic moment in all of my recovery in 34 years, the single coolest time was when Cliff Bishop finally convinced me that working with others and carrying a message of recovery that would change their life would be the single most important thing I could do. And he was right. And he was right. I got to tell you, while I'm here thinking about it, there was a place in Oak Cliff, which is kind of the hood off of the Dallas. And there's a place over there called Homeward Bound. And it was a two-story brick building that smelled amazingly like urine. Every time you went in it, they'd pull these little cats in right in off the street, and guys and gals both, and they'd get them sober. And then they would figure out where to send them or what to do with them. But I was carrying the message out there for years and years and years. And it was just sort of amazing. I want to tell you guys that there, I used to go out there on Wednesday night and Friday night until my daughters got big enough that they killed that Friday night deal. I had to be there with them. But Wednesday night and Friday night was it. Every Wednesday morning when I woke up, I can remember opening my eyes and I would kind of run through things in my head like y'all do too. And I'd go, oh, fuck, it's Wednesday. That means I got to drive all the way over to Homeward Bound tonight. And I would just go, I'm trying to let you know, I'm being as transparent as I can be. I want you to know it's not something I look forward to doing. It's a 55-minute drive with no traffic, and that doesn't happen in Dallas. So it would take me an hour and 20 minutes to get over there. And you walk into that building, it smells like piss, and you'd go in there and I'd carry the message. But listen to me. Every time I was there, I would finish up. They would let us walk out onto the fire escape and walk down so we didn't have to walk back down through the building. And we'd walk out there. And when you open that door, you're looking at the skyline of Dallas with the moon coming up on there like this. And you take this big breath of fresh air. And I'd look down in the parking lot. My homies are down there leaning against their truck, smoking and just carrying on. And you could hear them laughing down there. And I'd walk down the stairs and it just, we'd joke and talk about what just happened. And we were all like we were on cloud nine. I'd get in my truck, put on some old Marvin Gaye, and drive an hour and a half back to my house. And it was just like heaven every time. I don't recall ever leaving there that I didn't feel transformed. And I never, ever got into a place where I didn't feel like the time that I spent there wasn't well spent. I mean, it was just like, this is good. I'm glad I did this. And then Friday night would come around, I'd do it again. Guys, if y'all don't have a commitment, if you haven't done it like that, find some place where you can go carry a message. It's a life-changing deal for you for sure. Let me tell you something else that was a life changer that was sort of a magic deal. There was an old saying, I think it's just a culture that says within our rooms that time is not important. that you can take your time. I mean, how many of us have, you just take your time, just, you know, I mean, in meetings all the time, you'll hear people that'll share that their sponsor has them working the work in 30 days or something like this. And then they had a great experience. And then a little while later, there'll be somebody going, well, you know, my sponsor, he's having me do a step a month and we'll probably be done in a year. You see, it's interesting when you take what you hear in some of these meetings and you lay it down over the text. One of the first things that you'll notice is that there's nowhere in the big book where it talks about taking your time. There's a little piece in there that talks about being careful that you don't rush somebody through the work too quick. But it's obvious really quick where the willingness is there. You better take advantage of that willingness. You don't want to be sitting around till they're not willing. I mean, we see that stuff all the time. Any of you guys ever listen to or hear a guy from the early 60s, called Alan McGinnis. Alan McGinnis did some talks, and one of the transcripts of one of the talks he did, they turned into a brochure that's still available called A Member's Eye View of AA. You can get it online. You can download it online too. A Member's Eye View of AA. I want to read you one little paragraph of this that Alan wrote. This was in the early 60s when he wrote it like that. What is that, 60 years ago? It's a long time ago when he wrote this stuff. There's a widely held belief in AA that if a newcomer will simply continue to attend meetings, something will finally rub off on you. And the implication, of course, is that the something that will rub off is the so-called miracle of AA. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that many people in AA accept this statement quite literally. I have observed them over the years. They faithfully attend meetings, faithfully waiting for something to rub off. The funny part about it is that something that is rubbing off on them is death. They sit there week after month after year while mental, spiritual, and physical rigor mortis slowly sets in. Ouch. Guys, that's a nice little bitch slap right there in the middle of your, McGinnis is not playing any games. He's trying to help us see and understand that sometimes you can miss the greatest opportunity that you're going to have because somebody's willingness. I'll pick on Ben again because he's right there on my screen. But if Ben comes into a meeting, there's usually an indication that there's some willingness there. Left alone, we pat Ben on the back. We tell Ben he's the most important guy in the room, and we just let him come in and sit and listen like this. I'm telling you, I'm betting hard folding money on this, that in short time, there will be an indication that Ben's willingness is beginning to wane. He's not looking. He's not asking questions. He's still showing up because he has to have his little paper signed. Or his wife just said, Hoss, if you don't go to these meetings, there is not going to be any fun and games or whatever the deal is. But listen to me, y'all. It's happened to every one of you. You'll end up with willingness slipping sideways. It'll just fade. And so you had a burning desire to get sober one day. And weeks later, you're looking at, I'm the same guy looking at myself in the mirror, but the willingness is not there. I've had a couple of weeks to make some different decisions, make some different plans. I've made some horrible decisions. I'm just not going to make those decisions anymore. And then it's going to be okay. Y'all understand? What I need is a better girlfriend. I'm going to get rid of that other gal and I'm going to get a better girlfriend or a faster car or a whatever, new golf clubs. It doesn't make any difference. I've got this worked out. Willingness is scary, guys. This is the reason why. When you read the text, one of the most reoccurring themes is this indication of this timeliness that they keep repeating. I mean, what part of next we launched out on a course of vigorous action? Any of you guys ever in a book study, y'all ever count how many times next is mentioned? Next, next, there's a timeliness to this thing. They're not talking about just taking your time. This is why it's troublesome, y'all. And we need to kind of pay attention. It'll feel a little bit uncomfortable, But let me tell you, as a guy who sponsored men and took our time getting through there, most of them never made it through the steps, maybe one or two. But when I got serious about this stuff and started working guys through the steps in like 40 or 45 days and kept the burner up underneath them while we were doing this stuff, I'm not being demonstrative. I'm not saying you will do this. I'm just saying we get up off our knees after doing a third step. I hand them some information off a fourth step. And I say, buddy, let's look at our calendars. Let's figure out a time about 10 days from now when we can do this inventory. Why would I give the sickest guy in the room the ability to tell me when he wants to do an inventory? Come on, he's going to do what I would have done. Put it off as long as I possibly can because it makes me feel uncomfortable. You see, 10 days is plenty of time. Come on, how many of y'all would recognize this like that? If I gave Ben a year to do an inventory like that, you know when Ben would start writing his inventory? The day before we got ready to do the inventory. I've watched it. Yeah, like guys sitting in cars right before the meeting, writing until their hands are bleeding, trying to fill in the gaps because they haven't done shit for all those years, the whole time I gave them. Timeliness is a big thing, and we'll. That's crazy. Let me ask y'all a question, then we'll wrap this stuff up. Have y'all ever thought about the possibility that maybe you're selling yourself short, that maybe you're settling for less in these rooms? It's just something I think we need to think about. And the time to think about it is maybe sitting in quiet time for a minute. Just ask yourself the question based on what it is that I'm getting. Am I selling myself short? It's easy to do. And I think a lot of us have done it. And let me explain kind of what I mean. I bet y'all remember this promises. Y'all ever get caught off guard by how many promises there are in the big book? It'll freak you out when you start counting them and start looking at them like this. I want to read you a part of one. I'm not going to read the whole thing, just a little piece of it. We are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Now, come on, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe? This is some heady stuff, y'all. Now, listen, either Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob in the first 100, either they were totally full of crap and they just made that stuff up. But what if it's real? What if I could walk hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe? You see, and you'll see this over and over and over again. I think it's really important sometimes to go back and look at where we are. Regardless of where you are, whether you're a week sober or 7 years sober, I think it's important to take a look at where we are and ask ourselves, am I moving towards this experience that's life-changing, or am I flat and stale and just here one day at a time? In the words of Mark Houston from years and years ago before he passed away, I smell more. I think that Bill and those cats knew that there was more, and they wanted us to find that. They wanted us to experience that, and it's right there in front of you. The only thing that's keeping you from doing it is you. I remember a newspaper article, a little newsletter article that somebody sent me years ago, and it down at the bottom of the newsletter, there was a little piece. This came out of Akron. There was a little paragraph, and it said, alcoholics, the only group of people on God's green earth that takes what works and then stops doing it. And I remember laughing and thinking, you know what? He's nailed it, because it's the truth. How many of us will find a place where we're okay in our own skin and we get okay and comfortable, and then we just stop doing the things that we were doing that kept us where we were supposed to be? our prayer and meditation goes sideways, our working with others goes sideways, it's easy to do that. And I'm not speaking from some mountaintop. I'm telling you, I've dealt with it for years and years and years myself. You'll find a place where you just get stale. If you want something absolutely magic sometime to do, when you're sitting by yourself sometime, go back in the big book and read from the ABCs over to the third step prayer. It's 2.5 pages from the ABCs over, and notice a couple of things. One, notice that Bill Wilson stopped talking about alcoholism completely. There's no mention of alcoholism in that thing. But he introduces us to two things. He introduces us to this idea of the stage character, which is fascinating. And then he introduces us to this concept that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. And my tendency naturally is to push back and go, whoa, 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 no way. My problem is Canadian whiskey and methamphetamines. That's my problem, you see. But how many of us have either experienced it or watched it, where people will get rid of the Canadian whiskey, they'll get rid of the meth, they'll do good for a little while, and then they'll fall apart again. And then they find themselves in that weird ass deadly cycle where they're just relapsing again and going back and doing the same thing over and over again. Guys, the secret to not relapsing again is to do what the book asks us to do. And the book asks us to do something that's really simple. It's really simple. Joe McQuaney caught me off guard one night. He said, "Myers, I don't know if I've ever met anybody that wants to make this program more complicated than you do." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, you just keep trying to make it complicated and it's not." I said, "Well, it's pretty complicated." "It is not." He said, "This program boils down to two things. How much time are you spending with God? How much time are you spending with God's kids?" It's step 11 and 12. Guys, what I realized over a period of time was that he was spot on, that he was absolutely right. It wasn't about how many meetings I was going to. It wasn't about my trophy sponsor. It wasn't about all this stuff. But what it was about was how much time I was spending with my creator, and then how much time I'm spending with God's kids. And so look at that ABCs to the third step prayer and read it a couple of times, and then see if you relate to the stage character. Come on, guys, how many of y'all have ever gone out with a girl in the beginning of the evening and you've been the sweetest, kindest, coolest, best guy in the universe? And then when it looked like halfway through the evening that you're not going to get to go play hide the weenie, then you will God, I hope there's no girls in here. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that. Honest, I'll take it all back. When it looked like you weren't going to get what you wanted, that you turned into a pouty little bitch. Does anybody but me do that? Come on, I'm looking at you. Some of y'all got that stoic. I'm not going to let him know. But here it is. Bill Wilson paints this picture of this stage character. Guys, I would go to a meeting and I'd walk out, pat myself on the back because I was a spiritual giant in that meeting. I'm pretty special like that. And then the next morning, I'd be riding motorcycles or flying airplanes with my homies, and we'd be cussing and gossiping and acting like absolute idiots. That's the stage character. But we get to decide, do I want to be an inauthentic idiot, or do I want to be a man that values his character? Do I care? I mean, but we, each one of us, gets to decide that. Do I even care? I think it's worth the effort to look at. I do. I think it's important. At the same time, go back and read a bunch of these promises. Go read some of them and then ask yourself these questions. 7 years into the program, I'm sitting there reading this stuff and I'm asking myself, have any of these things manifested in my life? Is there any freedom in my life? Am I still scared? Am I still all of these things? Am I still hypocritical gossip hound? Am I doing things that make me just indicate that I don't care about my character? Guys, it's really easy to slip off in that. Again, I'm not talking from some mountaintop. I am the poster boy of inauthenticity. But when I recognized what was going on, I had to make a decision. You're sort of left with that decision. You have to make it. Do I want to stay where I am being inauthentic, or do I want to move towards being real? Character is huge in this thing, and you have to sacrifice sometimes. The other piece of this thing was, how much time am I spending with God? I heard this kid in a meeting one night say, he was like 19 years old, and he said, I was talking to my sponsor today, and he asked me, if God was my girlfriend, would he be happy with how much time I'm spending with him? But when it was phrased like that, I laughed and I thought, you know, that actually is a great question. How much time am I spending with my Creator? Is it a backing out of the driveway? God, I need some help today. Thanks. Bye. I mean, is it like that? Or is it a serious attempt at moving towards your Creator to sit still? Have I ever really considered what meditation looks like? What contemplative prayer looks like? There's 100 things here that we could talk about along that one little area that would move me towards God. Mark Houston years ago, he used to always talk about, I don't want to be next year where I am now. And so I think the $64,000 question is, over the years, am I growing? Am I changing who I am? If you want to know the truth, seriously, if you've given spiritual consent to a sponsor, ask your sponsor that. Ask your girlfriend or your wife that. Am I different than I was a year? If she says, no, not really. excuse me. If she says that, then we get to choose what we do. Do I want to go ahead and move towards some stuff? Let me wrap this up real quick. There's a book out there called Never Alone. Never Alone. It was written by some cat named Joseph Gerzon or something like that. It's on you online. It's real small. It's just a little book. But I'm amazed how much information is in there that helps move doorways out of the way between me and God. And I've been in and out of churches for 60 years. I've got hundreds and hundreds of theology books on my iPad. I read a lot like this, but that little book seemed to do more to connect me to God than any other book I've read lately. Another book that I think some of you cats would really, really dig, go back and read any of the old Brennan Manning stuff. Brennan Manning was an iconic Catholic guy. I was always raised Protestant, but I'm amazed at how many guys I read these days that are Catholic that just blow me away. But Brennan Manning wrote a dozen books over the years. I never would have listened to him if he'd been this polished dude, priest, but he was a alcoholic of the 10th degree. He was just like, and he had long seasons of sobriety where the church loved him and everybody was, you know, patting him on the back. And then he'd crash and he'd burn. And it was just devastating. But in those moments, he would write these books and relay all of this information. And it was fascinating. He wrote one in the 80s. I think it was the first book that he did called Ragamuffin Gospel. A lot of us read it and then put it aside. I found my old copy and read it. Guys, in the first 30 pages, I probably marked 30 different paragraphs and lines that flat blew me away. There's so much wisdom about a relationship with God, whether it's a Christian God or what. I mean, look at how he writes it. It'll blow you away. All of those efforts pay off huge. Because it'll put you in the right frame of mind and it'll get you back on track and the drifting will stop. And then you'll realize that you're in this sort of sweet spot. Guys, let me close with this. I'm so glad I'm sober today. I'm so glad that I'm not heading for a dope house or doing anything stupid today. I'm delighted. I'm far more delighted with the fact that I'm in a position, because I got sober, that I could help others who have not gotten sober yet, that I could alter the course of where they go because of the knowledge that I've gained by reading and seeing and sitting in these rooms and being a part of this fellowship, that I could look back on my life and realize that I could affect change is magic. I mean, how many people get to do that? Get at the end of their life, they'll go, well, I made a lot of money. Okay. I married a hot girl. Okay. I live in a great big house. Okay. But how about this? I was able to, based on what I was taught, I was able to pass on a life-changing program that affected lives and in some cases saved lives. Now that's some heady stuff. It truly is. Listen, I love you cats, and thank you for letting me come visit, okay?
Thank you. Oh, wow. So many nuggets there in Myers's description of his experience. And a couple of things that I took away from that is that this process over time becomes about the refinement of our character, and character and walking the spiritual path are so closely related. There's something that happens to our character when we live this idea, this concept of work and self-sacrifice for others. And I was a member that was guilty of thinking I was going to grow spiritually by constantly putting myself back into the work. And I will never forget listening to Don Pritz. He's doing a workshop. I want to say it's Slidell, Louisiana. And he says, you know, God bless the big book thumpers, because they actually think the work in Alcoholics Anonymous is being in the work themselves. And he said that we grow spiritually when we watch the transformation of another human being. There's something that happens in our witnessing of the regenerative power of God and being involved in that process. It changes me at a level that my own work with the steps doesn't do. Now, and I'm not discounting the experience that we have working the steps. But when we're able to witness the jewel of our program, which I believe is sponsorship, 10 and 11, there are those things, those ideas that allow us to experience the imminency of God, that God is here now. It's not some transcendent thing, although it is, but it's also imminent. It's a very paradoxical, but can we experience and cultivate the expectancy of God's presence and then carry that into this idea of helping these creatures, God's kids, to solve their problems? There's something beautiful that happens in that process. And one of the reasons I started this sponsorship family meeting is what I heard in Myers was earnestness. You know, I heard the truth. I don't hear it enough. You know, I know sometimes we ourselves, because we have these pockets of enthusiasm, sometimes we forget what it's like in the majority of meetings. The descriptions he gave this morning, because I've been around for a minute and I've been to, I don't know how many meetings in almost 15 years, what he spoke about was the truth of what's actually happening out there. And so this group is meant to put us together as a spiritual entity of travelers that are trying to go in the same direction. We don't have to interpret everything the same way, but we've got some baselines here that are very important. When you surround yourselves with a group of travelers that are all headed in the same direction, that have a passion about God and working these 12 steps and then carrying the message to the people that are still suffering, and you stay, you're less likely to veer off that path. That was one of the main reasons I wanted to start this group. And Myers, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thank you for your experience and your wisdom. And I love you, brother. And thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday morning to be with us. We do have a few minutes, so I'm going to, we don't punch a clock at this meeting, as everyone knows. So if you have a question for Myers, please go ahead and ask it. We'll take we got time for maybe two or three questions. All right. I see a bunch in the chat. Thank you, Myers. What was the name of the first book you mentioned before the Brennan Manning thing?
Never Alone.
And who is the author? Someone's asking.
His name is Joseph Garzone. I think it's G-I-R-Z-O-N-E. He's written some other books, and I've read those. But this little Never Alone thing kind of hit me in a way that I remember reading it outside. I love sitting outside in the morning anyway. And I remember sitting out there and I was reading this thing and I went, every page I turned, it was like I was getting bitch slapped by a piece of information that I'd never really considered, but it was all on a gut level. It wasn't just this intellectual thing I was reading. This was a cat that's been through some stuff and he's relating some of this and you kind of go, wow. And it was just real special. And I think I bought mine on a copy online and I had a hard copy, but it was real cheap. It's just a small book.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. All right. So we're going to take a moment of silence now. Of course, as always, we're going to stay on this call for about 10 or 15 minutes and feel free to join us. Let's take a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Thank you, Myers. You guys have a great day.
Thank you, buddy.
Myers, thank you, brother.
You betcha, y'all. Thanks for letting me come.
Thanks so much. That was amazing.
Thanks, buddy.
Left it. All right. Thank you.
I don't get to do too many talks with rooms that don't have a lot of girls in there. And it just to see a room like this, that would just men there. I didn't want to be real spanky. I'm sorry. Sometimes I do get a little passionate about it because I get frustrated with how much stuff I'm seeing that just has no bearing on the program stuff. It just,
no, I get it, brother. You speak my language.
That we went to a deal the other night at a conference that had an old people's meeting thing where they had 20 old guys in there sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And there were some gals in there too. But what was blowing me away